Hello and welcome back to the Road Trip Playlist Podcast. I am your host. My name is Thomas Darrow. I am super glad to be here to have a new episode, with Noah Kahn, one of my favorite artists. And this is one of my favorite interviews that we did this year. So I'm glad to have it. I saved it for a few weeks to release at the end of 2021. So it can kind of be the bookend on a great year. And I'm super excited for 2022 and a new season and new guests. And we've already got some great ones lined up. So I'm excited to share these interviews with you. But I'm even more excited to have this episode for you this week with Noah Kahn. And I can talk about Noah Kahn a lot. I got to see him a few weeks ago live, perform back-to-back nights in New York City at Webster Hall to a sold-out show and see the crowd, and it was electric. It's one of my favorite concerts of the year. I wrote about it for our website, roadtripplaylist.com, but also being able to see these new projects live. In 2020, he released kind of a folky EP, which we talk a little bit about in our interview, that is fantastic, each song on there, and it's called Cape Elizabeth, and it's one of my favorite projects that came out in 2020, as well as in 2021, he released his sophomore album, I Was, I Am, which I think is also equally brilliant, if not more, perfect follow-up to the huge success of his first album, but it's one that I know that you will love. Ever since I saw him in concert, I haven't been able to stop listening to it. I know I can already guarantee it's going to be on my Spotify Wrapped next year, and one of the first things. So I'm excited to share this interview. I think we have some good stories, some good laughs. Noah is extremely funny. He's one of my favorite Twitter follows. And so it was fun to share some laughs, share some stories, and more on this, the last episode of 2021 of the Road Trip Playlist Podcast. And again, this is the longest intro I've ever had, but I appreciate you guys so much for listening this year. And I can't wait to share more with you in 2022. But most importantly, here's the last one of 2021. It is with Noah Kahn, one of my favorite artists. Please enjoy the interview as much as I did. And stay tuned after a quick word for our sponsors. Noah Kahn, it's great to be with you. The healthiest man alive. How are you doing?
I am the picture of health. I am in a hotel room in Syracuse with a stuffy nose, but I'm getting ready for a show and I'm super excited to be on the road, man.
No, that's a thrill. I'm glad to hear that you've been feeling better. I know you have a few interviews today, so I appreciate you taking the time to speak with me on the Road Trip Playlist Podcast. Selfishly, I'm glad you're feeling well, because I'll be at the show in New York at Webster Hall this week, and I'm super excited. It's the first concert I've been like this excited for since the return of concerts. How's the tour been for you?
It's been great, and thank you so much for coming to the show. I'm excited. The tour has been awesome. I mean, it's touring. I'm not sitting in my dad's house on Instagram Live, which is a huge, anything besides that is awesome. So I've been very happy to be out playing shows. And, you know, we have a lot of music has been made and since I last toured. And it's just nice to kind of be playing with my band again and be traveling the country and kind of getting back to this crazy lifestyle that I lived for so long before COVID.
Absolutely. And the tours have looked pretty electric from what I see on Instagram. But Noah, before we get too far in, I have to get out of the way. Just some New Hampshire and Vermont talk. That's been my escape from the city. Luckily enough, I met someone from New Hampshire that it's like, oh, it's been a good escape for a group of my friends to get out from the city every few weeks and go to New Hampshire. But I went to Vermont for the first time last month as well. And both are incredible states, and we don't talk about them enough. And so I have to note how amazing these states are. My friend told me I shouldn't talk about them, though. My friend from Vermont says, please don't let people know because we like it this way.
Yeah, well, I think that the government in Vermont would disagree. We really want people to move there. It's has been one of the most elderly, it's some of the most elderly population in the country. We want people to move to Vermont. Please come to Vermont. But don't go to New Hampshire. No. There's a little beef between Vermont and New Hampshire, and I take a lot of flack because I did live in New Hampshire for a long time. And so people from New Hampshire say, you're a New Hampshireite, and I claim Vermont because I love it so much. But they really are two absolutely beautiful states. If you like being really, really cold, then go to Vermont and New Hampshire. But they're beautiful in the summer. I personally, the winters are a lot for me, but They're just wonderful spots with wonderful people, and they're definitely like a hidden gem. And I think that they're going to start blowing up in the mainstream pretty soon.
I'm with you, especially all that you have to talk about really is the summertime, how beautiful it is, as well as the creamies. I had my first creamy 3 weeks ago.
Oh yeah.
And I have to go back.
So good, man. It's so good. The summer there is just so, I think it's the greatest. I think being in Vermont and New Hampshire are two like the greatest places to be in the summer in all of America. I think it's a perfect climate. You got lakes and rivers and hiking. It's so nice, man. The creamies, you can't go wrong. Syrup, you can't go wrong. We got Bernie Sanders somewhere around there sometimes. It's great, man. We're all wearing flannel. We're all driving Subaru Outbacks. It's all there.
Absolutely. I appreciate you let me talk about that. This is the Road Trip Playlist podcast. I started it and it got its name, and now it's the kind of name of the website publication that I started as well during the pandemic. But it got its name because I during college would go on a road trip. I had a rule to go on a road trip every month. And so to make that work, I had to have a new playlist every time. So I would put together these playlists and find all sorts of new music. And so I actually found your music. And one of the reasons I'm so excited to have you on is I found Sync a few years ago and put that on one of my road trips to Joshua Tree National Park when I was living in Utah. That's where I'm from. And so it's great to have you on the Road Trip Playlist podcast. And you've been on so many of my road trip playlists. What's on your road trip playlist?
I think the best road trip music, there's this guy, Gregory Allen Isaacoff. He just makes incredible road trip songs. I mean, that's also, I feel like a lot of artists may not want to hear that their song's good for road trips. I don't really know why, but like, I think it's because like it kind of implies that you're like half driving, half listening. But but I think he makes amazing music to look out the window to. He's very atmospheric. Any Bon Iver, anything atmospheric, like a Bon Iver or a Novo Amor, Gregory Allen Isaacoff, Lumineers, anything with like a four in the floor, like a Lumineer song with a kick bouncing in. Those guys are all great. Sometimes it's cool. I like to listen to like Odessa if I'm trying to get a little more electronic. They make great road trip music. That's a good question. Mount Joy, amazing road trip music.
Oh, absolutely.
They're awesome. Rainbow Kitten Surprise. Dijon is a new artist, makes really cool road trip music. That kind of stuff is really cool.
Totally. Yeah. It's like you found one of my playlists because you named them all. And now I'm second guessing all the times I have complimented people and said that they're perfect for a road trip playlist.
No, I'm just a pretentious asshole, dude. Don't worry about it. No one else actually feels that way. I actually am not offended at all. I get told that by all the time from people like, oh, you make great music for listening to in the car. And I love it, man. I think I have the best time listening to music when I'm just driving in the car, like blasting it, singing along to the words in my own space.
Absolutely. You
know, paying attention to the road, of course, being a model driver. But yeah, I love listening to music in the car.
See,
I'm not offended at all.
Yeah, to me, I mean it in the highest regards, because it's like a good playlist and a good sound will be able to enhance your trip. And it's more than just like, it's not white noise for me. Whereas like when I'm home working from home, I just left my couch where I had like Big Brother on as just purely white noise and I'm not paying attention. But when I'm driving, I'm taking it all in. So
totally. Yeah. I get the sense that you're very passionate and caring about music. I appreciate that, man. Thanks for including me in the road trip playlist. That means a lot.
Yeah. How can I not? But I wanted to talk back about Sync, the first song that I found, how I discovered you and put on my song. That's the song you also got discovered by as well. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. That song is kind of what got me my chance in here in this music industry. I was recording songs with a friend of mine in Vermont and putting them on social media and SoundCloud. And then we put that one out and it weirdly just started getting like a bunch of plays like overnight. Like I literally remember looking at my phone one day, it was at like 1,000 plays. And I looked at my phone like 2 hours later and it was at like 5,000. Something crazy is happening. And then I just watched it. Like I was at my friend's lake house and I was watching throughout the day as it grew. I was like, this is fucking insane. And then I remember getting a message from somebody on SoundCloud and it was this manager and he was like, hey, I found your song Sync and like, it's really good. And I want to like come meet you and like be your manager. And it was like, holy shit. I like felt my life change in like 5 minutes. And I recorded that song in LA and I went to a record label and I sat in a weird dark room with all these older guys watching me, asking me to play him a song. And I played him that song. And then a couple hours later, I got an email and I had a record deal and then I dropped that. I didn't go to college. And then I kept going and I don't know. That song definitely started it all.
I found it fascinating, though, as I've listened to a few interviews for you to prep. And so I found it fascinating because when you put it online, you weren't really pushing it much. You said you posted about it on like Facebook to a few hundred friends. But you weren't really to the point where you were like, yeah, everyone listen to this, like pushing it, and that it was still found. It is crazy to me. What was the plan with college? Were you going to study music and pursue this more, or was there a different plan going into Tulane?
Yeah, I was going to go to Tulane and go study. There wasn't a great music program there, but I kind of wanted to go to a college that felt like very collegey, and like, I wanted to have a full college experience. I wasn't really looking to go to a music school. I think I kind of figured that like I could just keep putting music on SoundCloud and Facebook and then like go to school, then like kind of have my career on the side and then have my school on the other side. And I think that was probably pretty unrealistic, but that was my thought process. And then, you know, the song did well enough. And I remember I had a dinner with my manager, my mom, my dad, and he was like, I'm not sure if you need to go to college. Like this is, we can hold off on college. You could defer for a year from Tulane and then check back in a year. And, you know, we did that, and then a year's time, things were good enough for me to defer again. And then, you know, I never ended up going, but I think my plan was always to be a musician, and kind of college was just kind of the way that my life was, that the way the winds of life were kind of pushing me, whether I wanted to go there or not. So I feel like not going was a great decision, because I don't think I had anything I really wanted to study. I wasn't very studious. I don't really care about anything besides music. And so I definitely don't think I would have been a great college student.
well, it's fascinating because obviously you have the plan. I mean, I loved hearing about you starting to write music at 8 years old. I don't know if we both share this, but I know the first song that you ever wrote was Wednesdays Are the Worst Day of My Life. I hate Wednesdays. Yeah. I've always hated Wednesdays. I don't know if the song, I haven't heard it. I don't know if it's about Wednesdays or whatever, but I hear it's a deeply depressing song.
It is very much about Wednesdays. I fucking hated Wednesdays back then, I guess. I don't know. Maybe something horrible happened to me on a Wednesday, and I'm compartmentalizing it. But I did write a song called Wednesdays, the Worst Days of My Life, and I performed it at the school talent show. And then I got a visit from the school guidance counselor the next day in class because it was so depressing. Like, there was literally, like, it was silence from the whole school when they heard the song. Like, so awkward. I was like ranting about Wednesdays, and the guidance counselor came to class. She's like, what's going on? No, everything okay at home? I was like, yeah, it's just Wednesdays, man. Everything's fine at home, dude. It's just fucking Wednesday. Two more days to go. 2 days have already happened, bro. When's the week going to fucking end?
Exactly. I hate it. Thursdays, I think, are the money days. I think that's the best day of the week. That's my take. I'm leaving here. But Wednesday stuck, and maybe that's part of the motivation to become a musician is now that this is your life. I don't know if the structure of a week is the same as a like full-time musician, that maybe Wednesdays don't mean as much. Cause it's like, who cares if it's in the middle of the week? Like my schedule isn't the same as other people.
Yeah, man. I got into this gig solely so I could avoid having Wednesdays play such an important role in my life. And I was sick of the Wednesdays had a fucking hold over me, dude. And I wanted to loosen its grip. So I was like, you know what? Let's go into a business where Saturdays and Sundays are your busiest days of the week, and like Monday is your day off. So yeah, man, it's all tied back to that. It's all tied back.
That's so funny. And let's talk more. I'm sorry that was there's no segue to get out of talking about Wednesdays and me throwing out a reckless speculation, but to now your new music. But I have to talk about your new music, because eventually, like, you sign a record deal at 17 years old, you release Busy Head, which is this incredible album, incredible debut album, and there's so many hits from that. But then I hope this isn't the wrong way. I've never really, like, I don't like comparing, but I think it's a better album listening through all the way through. I like both of them. I think they're both nearly perfect. But this is one of my favorite albums of the year. What was some of the inspiration like behind it? Because I know I've read you talk about how you weren't feeling as connected to your music. There was some self-reflection going on. What was the writing process of I Was I Am for you?
Yeah, I think like I released, I mean, here's the thing, man, like you get your entire life to write your first album and then you're expected to have a second album like a year later. And I like, I think that idea just really fucked with me really bad. And I was like, damn, and I got to write this whole another album that's supposed to be better than the first one and have a year to do it. And now people have some odd, there's a look, I mean, I'm not like, I wasn't like super famous like or anything, but like I people had some, there's some eyes on me and some people that wanted to hear what I was going to do next. And I took that like really personally, and it felt weird to have to like live up to some weird expectation. And I already struggled with so much like writer's block and self-doubt that I was just like feeling trapped by my career. And I felt like I was trapped in this like cycle of trying to get better and impress people, but not actually feeling like I was able to live these experiences. I lived my whole life before I wrote my first album, and then I had a year to live to inspire this next project or whatever, a year and a half. And that really disturbed my psyche and like disturbed my creativity. And I think it was kind of reaching a boiling point. And then, you know, the pandemic hit in March, and I drove back home to Vermont, my little brother from New York. And I was at home, and for the first time in years, my whole family was home together. And I just felt like I was a little kid again. And I felt like I was back to who I was when I was writing that first project. And I felt connected to these fans through these Instagram lives that I was doing. And I was just playing kind of this like more folky stuff that I was messing around with. And I made this project called Cape Elizabeth that was really born in the first few weeks of that time period. And it really set me free musically. And it felt like I didn't put any pressure on it. I wrote it and recorded it in like a week. And well, I wrote it over a long time, but I recorded it in a week, and people really still liked it. And people still felt like it was cool. And it was nice that I had this affirmation of people being like, hey man, it doesn't have to all be hits, or doesn't have to be a crazy project that you make with the biggest producer in the world. Like, we love your music. And that kind of helped me get to a place for I am, where I felt free and I felt creative and I felt like I could just do whatever I felt and do whatever I wanted and take my time and kind of look at myself a little bit harder and not feel like I was just trying to impress people. And that kind of was the birth of the writing process for the record. And I kind of took the notion of trying to relax, trying to really look at who I am now. I had this crazy grind mentality of just like sticking my head down and working through, and no matter what, getting ahead, and I'll worry about who I am later after I have the success. And I didn't get to have that during COVID. And I felt like I had to look at myself a little harder and take a step back and really contemplate. And yeah, that kind of birthed a few of these songs, and it definitely birthed like the concept of this record. So I felt set free by the pandemic in a lot of ways.
Well, that's a lot of feelings and a lot of powerful feelings to be able to feel set free. How was that? How did it feel, or how did those feelings grow or continue after you released the album?
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know. I feel like once you let go of that like need for everything to be totally perfect and for everything to be a big hit or to be the most successful person in the world, I've kind of accepted that I am what I am as an artist. And I have a fan base that really seems to care about me and care about the music I'm making. And I feel like once I let go of the need to dominate or whatever I felt in my head or whatever the ego of my head was telling me to do, I was able to kind of just like relax and be more in touch with what I wanted to do musically and have the freedom and kind of let myself have the freedom to experiment and try to grow. And I felt, yeah, I just felt set free by putting out two projects that I really loved and cared about and didn't go into making thinking about just having a huge hit instead of thinking about like making good music.
And the music's incredible. And I think the artistry is what I love in the songwriting. You mentioned experimenting. What's some of the experimentation that went into, I guess, both Cape Elizabeth as well as I Was I Am? I know there's one's a little more folky, one's a little bit more upbeat, but they're both equally brilliant.
Well, thanks, man. Yeah, I think that's kind of it. Like with Cape Elizabeth, I was like, yeah, I'm just gonna be like granola folk guy with a guitar. That's what I want to do. And I wasn't trying to like kind of blend pop so much into it. I was like, let's just make some folky stuff and kind of have some like classic storytelling. And it was kind of nice to have that side of things and approach that side of things, which I come from, that's kind of my background in songwriting. I feel like a little bit more folky. And with I Was I Am, I was really excited to kind of make it big anthemic studio pop. And, you know, obviously trying to keep a through line of storytelling and narrative and any emotion and not feeling like I was sacrificing that for like big glitzy pop songs, but
yeah,
just allowing myself to be big and make songs that were going to sound awesome live. I really approached this record trying to make music that felt like it would be just kick ass live. And I've been seeing that on this tour. It really does translate. Yeah, just kind of letting myself just go all out and like kind of be shamelessly anthemic on a lot of these songs. to make the production feel really upbeat in a lot of songs, but still allow the lyrics to kind of tell a melancholy tale. It's kind of a cool device, and I was happy to be able to kind of put that into play on this record. So yeah, I feel like I was able to kind of scratch two different itches, I guess, creatively on both these projects.
And I think that's what's truly special is, and so that leads me, I have two questions about that, because I wanted to know, I was curious, you've been writing since you were 8. I know your mom's an author and like been an inspiration writing wise with you. How has writing about kind of vulnerable, also melancholy type subjects always been something that was comfortable for you?
Yeah, I was really lucky. I was really lucky and privileged to grow up in a house where talking about your feelings and talking about what was hurting inside was like encouraged. And I was lucky to have a family that used humor to kind of like talk about really difficult things and to use, talking about feelings as a way to get through things as a family. And it was just encouraged. It wasn't taboo in our household as it is for so many people in this country and in the world. And I think that really kind of set the stage for me as a writer. Like I was writing from a young age, and for me, it was just normal to talk about how I was feeling, and I would write about how I was feeling all the time, and I had no shame at all about it. So I think that's really helped me as I've gotten into a career in music and a career in writing, be comfortable with vulnerability. Also, I feel that when I see the results of like being vulnerable, help other people, other fans and people help them understand their own feelings, it kind of supersedes, like that ability supersedes any insecurity I might have about being vulnerable. Like if you can help someone get better, and all it takes is you being a little vulnerable and looking at your own problems, and like it's just totally worth it. So I was lucky to grow up in a house where that kind of openness was encouraged, and I'm happy that it's translated into my music. I think it's one of the things I'm the most proud of.
Absolutely. I think both of those are very powerful things, especially I had a similar experience. I never want to make this about me, but one of my things with I writing my feelings down, that's how I always did it. It was an outlet that I, instead of bottling things up, I would write things. And so there was a time I wrote a poem about my feelings with something, and my mom, like my teacher made me show my mom. I used it to suck up to my teacher to get a better grade in school. Cause it worked. I was the class clown. And so I knew like, if I did something, I knew how to beat the teacher. And so writing a poem that would be good and sharing it with them, got me from an unsatisfactory citizenship grade to an honor citizen grade without changing my behavior.
Let's go.
So she made me show my mom. And so then it was like a very powerful tool to see like, oh, when my mom realized these feelings that I had, it opened a lot. So I think that's really special that you had that in your house, and as well as this, what you're creating for other people as well.
Yeah. And I think, I was also the class clown. And I think a lot of times the class clown has a lot of pain, has a lot of shit they're going through. You know, there's a humor is like a great coping mechanism and a great self-soothing mechanism. And I definitely had that. So I totally feel you. I did the same thing. Like in class, I was always like so loud, like bombastic. And then the stuff I would write down, my teacher would be like, man, you're such a good kid. Why don't you just shut the hell up for a couple minutes? Be who you are in your writing. I'm like, I know.
that's the relationship I shared. And I still have a little bit. My insecurity is still there with writing, and I'm still sometimes scared to show people. But my relationship with school was, I'm there to have fun and kind of make it fun for other people. I didn't understand the learning aspect, even though I was okay at it. It was just being there, the class clown. So I'm glad that we both share that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm curious how many times where the songs are a little bit more, they're more covering emotional subjects. They can be sad, depressing, whatever people say. I'm wondering how many times with some of the upbeat ones that people misinterpret the meaning, or they don't catch on to like what the lyrics are truly saying.
Yeah, I think sometimes, I think what I really love about my fans is how much they like kind of dissect the music and look at everything. So I feel like they're pretty diligent, but a lot of times I had some songs on the radio. Like I have a song, False Confidence, was on the radio, and the song Cynic kind of was on the radio a little bit for a while. Now I have a song, Someone Like You, that's just kind of on the radio, and they're kind of all these upbeat songs with like very dark, sad meanings. And people are like, fuck this like bubblegum pop, like cookie cutter lyric bullshit. I'm like, yeah, I don't know. It's not Like, I kind of get it. It's not that bubblegum. Like, I'm saying some pretty real stuff. Like, maybe listen to it a little bit. You seem angry. Like, maybe listen to this music. Like, I feel you. Like, maybe you'll feel it a little bit. And I think sometimes people hear the music and they just hear the sounds and they hear the music and they're like, this is just like pop. And like, this is just like upbeat pop, like classic, like bullshit, like be real. And then I recommend them to listen to the lyrics a little bit because it kind of goes deeper than that. So I'm hoping that people, you know, the upbeat melodies will like catch people and that they'll listen a few times and like hear what I'm saying a little bit.
Absolutely. And I think that's where the power comes with you is I think you're an incredible songwriter. I'm selfishly using this as a time. I you mentioned being self-conscious and still have it, still living with that a little bit. So selfishly, I think those are the people that think through it the most. So I like to ask people like you, tips that you may have for people with writing. And I know you've said you work the muscle, you write every day. That inspired me when I listened to a past interview with you. What tips do you have for people in songwriting or creatively in general?
It's just, you know, I like to think it gets like a lot easier and that I have some like kind of crazy like solution. Cause I used to look up like my favorite writers all the time. And I'd be like, how do you like, what did they say about dealing with writer's block? And I never felt satisfied by their answers. I think that if there's like any advice that I have, it is writing every day, but I know how fucking terrible and hard that is. And so I think that just looking at the data is what I like to do. It's like, I've made great music before when I felt like shit and I felt like I was never going to make anything again. So I know that this time is no different than I can do this again. Like I can, I know I can, I doesn't feel like I ever will again, but I know I can. You know, believing in yourself, believing in the hard work you've done to be a writer and to create writing and understanding that it's just going to come when it comes. But giving yourself a chance to actually draw it out, like not just sitting around waiting for lightning to strike, but like, you know, writing every day and waiting for that moment to come. And like, and when that moment does come, really harnessing it and really appreciating that. And maybe looking at what you did to get to that place. I find if I write something good, I try to retrace my steps. I'm like, how did I approach this song? Like I approached it with relaxing. Maybe I meditated. Maybe I got exercise that day. Maybe I wasn't putting too much pressure on myself that day and something really good came out, and trying to like take those little lessons from those like powerful, strong moments and remembering them for the next time. I think like a lot of times I feel like when I have nothing to say and I feel like I've been banging my head against the wall all day, it's like some sneaky little thought just kind of creeps its way into my brain and then something really great comes out. And I think just allowing yourself to get to that place and like not expecting success every time, like allowing yourself to be frustrated and to not feel like you're doing great and understanding that sometimes like greatness comes from dog shit, I think.
I love that. I'm going to try to incorporate that. My thing is once I'm done writing something and once I submit it and I've edited it and all that, I usually am too afraid to read it back. I'm just like, oh, I'm too self-conscious of my own writing. And then I'll be preparing right for an interview and I'll read back. Oh, this is what I wrote the last time I talked with them or this or that. I'm like, this is freaking good. Like I'm not bad at totally. This, but I'm not good at going back. So I'm going to try to incorporate that. Cause every time I do, it's a good feeling, but yeah.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah. I think it's easy to like pass off all of your successes as like flukes and not want to read them or whatever. And like, I think you just have to kind of start accepting your past work a little bit. I also like, I have like a weird relationship with all my past work. I'm like, fuck that. Like I want the newest thing I do to be the best. So I don't want to have to care about that, but there's like a lot of lessons in the older stuff you did and like the successes you've had in the past. It's definitely worth reexamining them.
Absolutely. Now I know you have another interview after this. I like to ask five quick questions at the end of every interview. For this, we call them the Fast Five. There's different names, but I'll do that really quickly with you. The first one, I'm curious your answer because I've taken a guess on what it might be, but I'm not sure. And it's if you had to choose between breakfast food, lunch food, and dinner food, food only from that meal group, which meal group would you choose?
I gotta go lunch, dude. Lunch is such an underrated meal.
Wow. Such an underrated meal. I breakfast saw your is, Instagram bio and I was like, oh, he's for sure picking dinner.
I don't so that's actually a saying my late friend's, he had an ad lib in the rap and he wanted to be a rapper. So he'd always ad lib because it's dinner time, bitches. And I thought it was really funny. And he passed away and I made it my bio. I just thought it was like the funniest thing ever, but I'm a lunch guy because I like to eat around like 2 because I don't really eat breakfast. I just don't, like, my stomach's never ready for it in the morning. I like drink a coffee and like fucking hate myself for like 2 hours. And like by like 2 p.m., I'm like so hungry. And then I eat lunch and I'm just like so satisfied. And then I just like eat dinner at like, I eat like a light dinner at like 8 p.m. just so I can have something in my belly. But lunch is the meal I'm like most hungry for.
Same. Okay. Two is your go-to karaoke song.
I go Doses and Mimosas by Cherub. Classic.
Okay. I've never
Very
heard that one
inappropriate.
before.
Check it out. It's incredibly inappropriate, but it's like such a banger. It's such a jam. You probably have heard it like at some point, but you just don't know the name. It's a classic.
Okay, perfect. I'll look that up and I might add it to my that's the only time I get on stage. Number three is your guilty pleasures you have while on tour.
Oh man. I play a lot of video games on tour, honestly. Like I do read and like I journal occasionally, but I honestly just spend any free time I get, I'm just like ripping FIFA in the bus. I play a lot of video games for sure.
Okay, who's your team you play with?
Chelsea, baby. I'm a huge Chelsea fan. I
Okay.
play. What about you?
Liverpool, if you need a game after the show on Thursday or Friday, let me know.
Oh my God, dude. I'm so down. I'm so about it.
Four is a group that's not currently together that you'd love to have one more EP from.
Oh, cool. That's a cool question. I guess off the top of my head, I want to say Neutral Milk Hotel. I think that'd be really cool.
Okay, that would be fun.
I wonder what they would do now. I think it'll be really cool. I'm not sure if the Bright Eyes are still making. I know Connor Oberst is still making music, but I would love to have like another Bright Eyes project.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's probably it. I really want to say, I think Neutral Milk Hotel can make a really cool project in 2021.
Yeah, those are two new names no one's ever said before, so I love that.
Oh, wonderful.
Number five is one an interesting guest you recommend I have on the Road Trip Playlist podcast.
Ooh. Well, you talk a lot about writing, and I really appreciate this dude's writing. His name's Adam Melcher. Do you know him?
Oh yeah, I know him, yeah.
Yeah, really a wonderful songwriter, and I would be interested to hear him answer some of the questions you asked about songwriting because I really think he has an interesting perspective, and he writes music in a really cool way. So that's someone I would like to hear.
Awesome. Okay. No, I love that. That's someone that's also been on my list. So that gives me an excuse to reach out.
Amazing. Man, thank you so much.
No, I appreciate your time. I hear there's a full project coming out soon. I'm not asking about it, but I'm saying that I hope that's true and I'm looking forward to it. I don't know if that's what already came out. I heard it in an old interview, so I don't know how old, but I'm excited for it.
I'm working on it, man. And when I stop banging my head against the wall and write some fucking songs for it, I promise they'll be out.
Okay, looking forward to it. Hope we get to talk again sometime.
Thanks so much, man. Thanks for the questions.
Thanks,
They're really
Noah.
cool.
Thank you, Noah. Thank you again for listening to the Road Trip Playlist podcast and my interview with Noah Kahn. Huge thank you for the year that 2021 has been and for listening to and sharing these experiences and interviews and stories with me. And I appreciate all of the feedback that I've gotten so far. And I can't wait for you to hear the new season in 2022. But again, thank you for listening to the interview with Noah Kahn. Remember to check out his latest projects with I Was I Am, as well as the EP that came out in 2020, Cape Elizabeth. I know you're going to love it. And as always, follow, rate, review the podcast, and stay tuned for a new season coming up next year. Thank you again.